I used to go on real vacations, wild vacations, where I did things like mountain bike in Arizona on expert trails and almost get myself killed. But still, it was vacation. So since I've had at least one child attending college for approximately the last 82 years, my vacation ambitions have been replaced with something more financially responsible. Less poolside in Sedona, more poolside in Wildwood Crest midweek, because I can't afford the weekend rates. But at least I know how much I can afford thanks to Monarch AI. Monarch is the personal finance app that tracks everything: accounts, investments, savings goals, and spending. And you could get your first year of Monarch for half off, just $50, with promo code HAPPENS. Monarch AI is helping me plan my summer vacation. Well, not like that. It cannot get a table, but what it can do is answer questions like, how much can I actually spend on beach tags and beer? So instead of staring in horror at the menu, I actually know what my budget is. And if things start to get out of hand, Monarch will let me know before I do something remarkably stupid, at least when it comes to my money. So use code HAPPENS at monarch.com to get your first year half off at just $50. That's 50% off your first year at monarch.com with code HAPPENS.
Attention all passengers. The Uber ride for Mark and Jamal's romantic weekend will depart in 4 minutes from platform 6. Your ride comes with a rolling countryside sunset view and a table seat ideal for playing footsie beneath. Thank you for booking your tickets on Uber.
Trains on Uber.
Hey everyone, welcome to another snack size edition of our show, How Success Happens. I'm Dan Bova, writer and editor at entrepreneur.com. You know, I talk to a lot of extremely driven people on this show, and I often ask them, you know, after they hit some huge financial milestone, in some cases, they sold a company for hundreds of millions of dollars. I always ask them, why do you keep doing anything? And breaking down the answers that I've gotten to that question over the years, it typically comes down to one thing. They just genuinely love what they do. And love is the topic of this week's guest's new book. Marcus Buckingham has spent the last 30 years researching human performance, loyalty, and resilience. And in his new book, Design Love In, he says that in the working world, people are operating under a false assumption that intensity breeds success, and that all that matters is the output. It doesn't matter how many eggs you break or souls you crush to get to where you want to go. But Marcus says, nuh-uh to that. Much more eloquently than I just did. So for the less poetic of us out there, I asked Marcus to explain why this idea of love is so important in business for founders, for their employees, and for their customers.
We're living in a world where most business leaders don't understand that the only thing that drives productive behavior is love, which we can get into. But the data behind love is very powerful. Love is the most powerful driver of all productive human behaviors. As a leader today, you've only got one job. You're trying to change behavior. You're trying to change behavior of customers, get them to come back more or advocate more or spend more, whatever. And you're trying to change the behavior of your employees, get them to be more productive or be more collaborative or be more resilient, better well-being, whatever it is. You're trying to change behavior. And there's really just two ways of changing behavior. You can be directive, which in the employee's case is you can set goals and then be, you know, challenging with your feedback and your coaching as you hustle and push people to achieve those goals. And with customers, you can set prices and incentivize through loyalty programs or specials or whatever, as though everybody's coin operated. So the directive, chest thumping, the kind of leadership that we see a lot of these days, that works for a short time. The data on this is unequivocal. It works for a short time. If you want to sustainably change people's behavior, customers or employees, you got to go further upstream. You got to apply the logic that experiences drive behaviors, drive outcomes. So if you want people to be productive, if you want customers to stay, if you want advocacy or loyalty, you got to change their behaviors. Well, if you want to change their behaviors, you got to change the experiences they have at work or the experiences they have doing business with your company. Whether your company is a product company or a services company or a financial company, it doesn't matter. Everything's an experience. So the book was really going to start with just going, hey, leaders, there is a new competency in town. It's called experience intelligence. It's the ability to shape experiences that shape behaviors. If you know how to do that, you'll win. Now, no Wharton, Stanford, Harvard, INSEAD, London Business School, they don't teach it. But you study the best leaders, they have very high experience intelligence. They know what I'm talking about, and they know the logic. Experiences drive behaviors, drive outcomes. You want to be an incredibly productive leader in terms of your team and your business. Well, then you've got to be an experience maker. And the bottom line of the book is you are one. Question isn't whether you are one or not. You are one. The question is, are you a skilled one? Are you skilled at experience making? We don't talk about leadership that way. We don't talk about entrepreneurship that way, but that's what it is. How do you design experiences which change behavior, which change outcomes?
So can you give an example of what an experience is in a very like concrete, specific way?
Well, yeah. I mean, in broad terms, if you write an email to someone, that's an experience. If you are calling a meeting, that's an experience. If you're doing a performance review, that's an experience. On the customer side, if you are an insurer, let's say you're Blue Cross Blue Shield and you have to write an email to somebody's denying coverage, okay, that's an experience. A lot of different ways in which you can do that. You could do it lovelessly all the way to lovingly. Terminating someone. You could do it like Oracle just did at 3 a.m. in the night with an email that dispatches people as though they aren't human. They're just cost elements that need to be removed from a transaction. Or you could terminate people in a way that says, we understand this is going to be super difficult. We want you to continue to express the best of yourself for right now for various reasons. We can't keep this cost on our books at the moment, but we want it. Like, there's all sorts of ways you could do that lovingly. In the same way, the best leaders, you know, some of the toughest conversations leaders have ever had with people are with people they love. Like tough love is a phrase because love isn't soft. I think people think love is, you know, just a coating of niceness or something.
So in the book, Marcus lists three disciplines to design love into your business. He calls it walk the stage, equip the people, and sequence the scenes. So I asked him if he could give us a quick rundown on those three things so we could see how they all fit into the design love in puzzle.
Yeah, I mean, in the book, I use the example of Kroger, actually, like the grocery stores. I mean, you could use it for anything, for Chick-fil-A, for Rivian, for Disney. The three disciplines that I was talking about in Kroger is, number one, walk the stage. If any business, you got to realize any business, from a product business, financial services business, in this case, it's a grocery store business, you're in the experience business. You're creating for guests and for associates an experience. So if you want to know what the experience feels like, go and walk the stage and do something that I call natural experience processing. So you just see where your experience, your natural senses, the five senses, take you. You don't walk in there knowing that you've walked that particular aisle 8,000 times. You walk in there with a beginner's mindset and you just go, I don't know where to go. Oh, I'm drawn toward the deli because of the smell. Oh, I'm drawn toward the bakery actually because you just seem to bake cookies. Go walk the stage. In Kroger's case, they found when you did that, there was a ton of visual pollution. Tons of noise visually. Why? Because there's so many different departments and each department is like a little playwright and they're making plays ignorant of the playwright that's coming on the stage right after. And so you end up, if you imagine that like an audience member, you're looking at a stage and there's a whole bunch of props on the stage left over from previous plays that were just on that they didn't clear anything. If you're an entrepreneur, walk the stage, which means go through the experience you're supposed to be delivering to a customer. Just experience it as though you've never experienced it before. You're an audience member trying to watch a play. What you'll find, by the way, when you walk the stage is you have to clear it. Walk the stage to clear the stage. Equip the people just means every person's important in a business. But there are some people who really carry the narrative. If we continue with the metaphor of the play, some of them really carry the narrative. If you're putting on the play Hamilton and the person playing Hamilton isn't good, or the person playing Aaron Burr isn't good, or King George, like you're doomed, right? Your whole thing's doomed. So with Kroger, it's like if you've got, if your competitive advantage is the fact that You've got people working in the store who love cheese or who love deli or who love butchery. And let's say that that is their competitive advantage, which they say it is. Then you better make sure that those particular people are super equipped. Mm-hmm. Do they know, like, have you really not just told them the script, but you've helped them play? What role are they playing when they do sampling in a grocery store? Why are you sampling? What are you trying to do? You trying to sell more of that cheese? Or are you actually trying to build a connection with the customer around a passion for cheese? We don't care how much of it you sell. We're actually trying to get you to be the kind of person where when people walk out, they go, oh my gosh, they've got people in there that love cheese. When I next need to buy cheese, I'm flipping coming to my Kroger there. Right. And then the last thing, sequence the scenes. If you think about what the world as an entrepreneur, as an experience, then an experience has a sequence. It does have it has a before, it has a during, it has an after. Have you sequenced the scenes being aware of that? So silly example, but if you know, Kroger's flower and balloon business is a $1 billion business. Well, most people go in and buy balloons at 7 a.m. on a Saturday morning because they're late. They got something in the evening like, I didn't get the balloons in my kid's graduating. Well, if you go into a Kroger and you're, by the way, this is real. You run and you see all these other parents or adults buying balloons. And Kroger's got a labor model where there's no one there. There's no one there because that's the labor model. So we don't need people at the place where you buy the balloons. So you walk in as a customer. You're like, I can't find anyone to buy their balloons. And then if you did have someone there, Kroger, how would you want the sequence to be? Do you want me to buy the balloons, leave them there, and then do the rest of my shopping and come back and pick up the balloons? Or do you want me to do all of my shopping, even though I've got there early and I'm a bit worried that if I do the shopping and I come back, there's going to be 10 other people who want the balloons now. But maybe you want me to do that so I'm not dragging the balloons around the entire store. What's the sequence you want me to do when I buy the balloons that I want to buy? Because there's no other balloon seller in a 20-mile radius. That sequencing, it sounds silly, but like sequence the scene. What do you want me to do first, second, third, fourth, fifth as I buy balloons, which by the way, you're the biggest florist in America. You might want to sequence that.
Right.
So, which is an example, because they did. They were like, we haven't sequenced it. What's the sequence? When you buy a car, you might go, it's an obvious sequence. No, it isn't. Who sequenced the buying of a car, the before, the during, the after?
Okay, so that is all about customers loving what we're doing, employees loving what we're doing. But what about us? How do we know that we actually love what we're doing?
So it's a really important question. As an entrepreneur, you're often, you start a business for all sorts of reasons. But if you think about a job, three big questions about a job. Why, who, with, and what? Why am I doing what I'm doing? A lot of work by Simon Sinek about, which is cool, on like, you got to find your why. Like, why am I doing this? The who, of course, is, well, who am I doing it with? I may be a team of one, but what happens if I have customers? Maybe I have some colleagues. So that's important. And the what is what are the actual activities that are filling my week? Of the three, surprisingly, the what always trumps the who and the why in the end. Always. Doesn't matter how much you believe in the why. If the what you're doing every day is an activity or a set of activities that drains you, you will burn up. Doesn't matter how much you love the people. If what you're doing every day, somehow in building your business, you end up doing a whole bunch of stuff in your day that you don't love, then your business will fail. The why and the who don't compensate for a whole load of activities in the week that drain you. Mm-hmm. Every successful entrepreneur that I've studied realizes that activities themselves have energy within them for no good reason. It's not gender or age or nationality or race or anything. Just a clash of the chromosomes. You may have a brother or a sister who's energized by totally different things than you are, but each one of us gets energy from very different activities. I call them red threads. Mm-hmm. Activities that you love is a red thread. And your working week is filled with many thousands of threads. And some of them are neutral. They're black, they're green, they're white, they're gray, whatever. You just got to do them. But some of the activities are red. They're activities that you love. Before you do them, you find yourself kind of looking forward to them. And when you're doing them, time flies by. And when you're done with them, you weirdly kind of, you pick up on details others miss, and then you kind of want to do it again. And that's a red thread. Well, the data is really clear that the most successful entrepreneurs don't have 100% red threads. They do not find a job they love. That's rubbish. There's no data on that. But they do find the love in what they do. They take their red threads seriously. And what that really means is you could kind of take a blank pad around with you for a week as an entrepreneur, even as a solo entrepreneur, draw a line down the middle of it and write, loved it at the top of one column and loathed it at the top of the other. And anytime you see one of the signs of love, like before you do it, you look forward, or time's flying by, scribble it down. Anytime you find the opposite, scribble that down. You get to the end of the week and you've just used the raw material of a regular week of your own life to start going, where are my red threads? Because the data would suggest you need 20% of them every week. Sorry, the data actually say 20% every day. So for every successful entrepreneur, there is a analysis that takes place where you go, wait a minute, where are my red threads? Where are they? Because if I don't take them seriously, God knows no one else will.
Love that advice, and love you for listening all the way to the end of this snack. The book is called Design Love In: How to Unleash the Most Powerful Force in Business by Marcus Buckingham, and it is on sale now, so check it out. Well, I'm going to say something from the bottom of my heart. I love you for listening, subscribing, and commenting to our show. As you may know, we do two shows a week, these snacks on the weekends, and we have a full show on Wednesdays with video, so you could see that on YouTube. If you would love more of me in your life, you could also check out my Substack. This should be fun. And also, if you love to dance and boogie, check out more music by the creators of our theme song, Nika RPM, over there on Bandcamp. All right. I'm going to go love me some ice cream, because I don't know if you could hear it through the microphone, but there is an ice cream truck outside my house, and there is only one acceptable response to that noise, and that is to run. Ice cream!